at this point in the service, we're going to think together about that passage that we read from John chapter 4. If you're able to, it'd be worth having the Bible open in front of you. It's page 942, page 1557, page 942. I'm going to take probably about half an hour to talk to you and think together about what God is teaching us in the recording of this event in the life of Jesus. Do you see? I know you do, some of us better than others, but do you see? The question's important because people saw Jesus. He came to Cana and there was a crowd. They saw him, but they didn't see. A man comes desperate for the life of his son. He's sent away without seeing. He sees Jesus, but Jesus tells him, your son lives. And without seeing that, he goes on his way. Why? Because he sees. He gets it. Jesus has spoken. His word can be trusted. That'll do. He sees. This crowd want to be impressed, possibly even entertained. They don't see anything. They don't even see the now healed son. He's 15 miles away. And so to those who don't see, Jesus doesn't reveal himself. To those who do see, Jesus reveals himself. So the question for us is, do you see? I know you can see the Bible in front of you. I know you can see the record of the life of Jesus. But do you want to see who Jesus reveals himself to be? Do you want to see who Jesus reveals himself to be? That is vital. If you don't, all you'll get is a story and half an hour of a guy standing at the front of church talking. If you do, God, through his word, can deal with you. Do you want to see? Do you want to see who Jesus reveals himself to be? Do you see? Now, there are three things that we should see as we look at this passage. We're going to deal with the first one first, because it should smack us right between the eyes. It's so obvious, we're going to mention it first. And that is that Jesus, there's this healing without contact. Verses 43 to 53. This healing without contact. This week we've had a rush to accident and emergency with Lucy, our daughter. If you see her face, you'll understand why. She's fallen and hurt her face. We had to go because a doctor had to see her. Some of us are ill and we can't go. So what do? We call the doctor to come and see us. The doctor's got to see us to treat us. And if some of you have had the NHS Direct conversation, someone who can't see you diagnosing what's wrong can be awfully awkward, can't it? The doctor has got to see, got to have contact with the patient to make the person better, to be understanding what the situation is. But here, Jesus in Cana heals a boy who is close to death in Capernaum, 15 miles away. And he doesn't even stand and command. He doesn't say fancy words. He just wills it. He tells the father to go. Go your way. His son lives. So the first thing we should see is this healing without contact. This is a remarkable display of power. Isn't it? It's remarkable because, firstly, of how sick the boy is. Verse 47, the last few words, he's described as close to the point of death. we make judgment calls all the time. Some of you might be poorly today, but you'll be in work tomorrow because it's not that serious. Some of you may come across an illness, or it may come across you, and it stops you because it's more serious. We make judgment calls all the time. It's obvious what's wrong with this boy. He's at the point of death. He is seriously sick. We learn later on from the words of the servant that the issue was a fever. Now, at that point, the fever had left him, but not here. This boy is sick, seriously sick. That should impress us. Seriously sick boy, healed. Like that. Some of you know what it is to recover from illnesses. Sometimes a knee or a hip, a joint is sorted out by the doctors, and it takes weeks, months, the doctors say, to get better. It's going to take time. Let it take time. Jesus heals the boy like that. The boy is sick, seriously sick. The boy is a long, long way away, 15 miles away. Jesus can't even see him. He knows he's poorly. He probably knows he's a fever. That's it. And yet he becomes quickly, perfectly well. Jesus says, he lives. Your son lives. And that's exactly the same message that the servants give. Here's a remarkable demonstration of power and authority. And just to help us, because some of us might think, well, he might have got better anyway. The father's able to put two and two together. When did my son get better? The seventh hour. The clock started at 6 o'clock in the morning. The seventh hour is 1 o'clock. In the afternoon. When did my son get better? 1 o'clock in the afternoon of the previous day. That's exactly when I was talking to Jesus. That's precisely when Jesus said, go your way, your son lives. He's put two and two together. It's this remarkable demonstration of power and authority by Jesus. Do you see? What do you see? You see a miracle? Yes. But a miracle with only the power that God has. A miracle with only the power that God has. Who on earth could stand 15 miles away and at one moment say, your desperately sick son is healed, go. Who can say that? The creator of heaven and earth, the creator of the human body, the one who put us all together. John is under no illusion as he writes the book. He told us from the very first verses of chapter 1 that this is God. This is God, this Jesus he writes about. It's God in human form. Make no mistake. He's not a miracle worker. He is a miracle worker. He's not a mere miracle. He's God in human form. He speaks with the authority of God. That's who you're supposed to see. The promise from the Old Testament was the arrival of the Messiah. And with the arrival of the Messiah would be healings, restorations. And here is Jesus. Healing a remarkably sick boy from a long distance away, instantly and precisely the point he speaks the words. Do you see? The healing without contact. That's the obvious thing to see from the passage, from the story. The slightly less obvious thing is this. There's a receiving without honour. There's a receiving without honour. Now here we're in the first three verses of the passage, verses 43 to 45. You know what it's like when you come home from summer holidays? It's good, isn't it? It's good to come back home. It's been good to go away, and it's good to come back. That's the idea, isn't it? And you arrive home, and it feels like home. The water's not the same abroad or anywhere else, and the comfort of the seats aren't the same. And it's just good to get back to base, good to get back home. Well, Jesus is coming back home. Galilee was the name of the area, and two towns are mentioned, Cana and Capernaum. Jesus grew up in Nazareth. It's not mentioned here, but Nazareth is 10 miles from Cana. Cana is 15 miles from Capernaum. It's a bit like Southport, Formby and Ormskirk in distance. Three towns pretty close to each other. And Galilee's the area. Jesus is coming home to where he grew up, to where he's already performed a miracle, to where people know who he is. He's coming home. But it's not a warm welcome, is it? What is Jesus? There's a record of Jesus said something, verse 44. Jesus himself has testified that a prophet has no honor in his own country. Do you see that? No honor in his own country. And yet he's going home. In fact, actually, it's stronger than that. He's going home because he said a prophet has no honor in his own country. We won't get a warm welcome there, so let's go there. That's not my reasoning. If work is a hard place to be, I don't want to go. If a particular family event is going to be embarrassing or difficult, I'm not in a rush to go. And I don't suspect you are either. Jesus is saying, we're not going to get a warm welcome. There's going to be no honor for me there, but we're going to go for that very reason. Does that make sense to you? Doesn't make sense to me. But then again, I haven't left the glories of heaven to rescue people who need God. And Jesus has. Jesus is doing here, he's coming home, knowing he's not going to get a warm welcome. He's coming because he knows they need him. He's done it all his earthly life. He's come into this world, John chapter 1, he's come to his own, and his own did not receive him. Now you might think that's a strange thing to do, and in one sense it is. But if people are going to be rescued, people are going to be saved, they're going to be rescued from where they are. This going where he is not honored is not just here as he returns to Galilee. He goes to his people, the Jews. He's not honored there either. And the lack of honoring continues to the point of ultimate rejection. They take him, they mock him, they spit on him, they beat him, they torture him, and they crucify him. Knowing that was going to happen in Jerusalem, he goes to Jerusalem. He's always going to places where he knows there will be no honor. Why does he do that? Hymn writers chosen some words to express the reversal through God's grace. The ultimate rejection to Jesus is his death. Hands that should discard me, the hymn writer says. Hands that should discard me because they bear the wounds of the nail that he was crucified with. Hands that should discard me, they bear wounds that tell me, come. Do you hear that? They bear wounds that tell me, come. Jesus in his grace will reverse this lukewarm welcome, this lack of honouring, and he will suffer under it, that he may invite anybody, even those who despise him on this day. He'll invite them to come. He'll receive anybody who will come to him and trust in his work. So there's this this lack of honouring. And yet, verse 45, we're told that they receive him. They receive him. He came to Galilee. The Galileans received him, having seen all the things he did in Jerusalem at the feast, because they had been there at the feast as well. He's coming home. Here he is. Wait till you see what he does. He could do some really good stuff. Wait to see. Do you see They don't want him. They want what he does. And that's what Jesus says. Look at verse 48. He's approached by this man who's imploring him to heal his son. And Jesus uses the plural, the you in plural. He says, unless you, the crowd, see signs and wonders, you will by no means believe. You don't want me. You want what I do. There's a receiving without honouring. Now, the next point will help us. We'll crystallise this thought. So we'll move on and then we'll hold them both together. The last thing we've got to see is this. There's this believing without seeing. And that's what I've talked about already. This father is sent away. He can't see that his son is healed, but he goes trusting that his son is healed. Do you see? And he goes, like I said to the children, believing twice. First of all, he believes when Jesus says, verse 50, go your way, your son lives. So the man believed the word that Jesus spoke to him and went his way. Then he meets the servants who meet him and share this news. Verse 51, your son lives. And they inquire and they tell him what hour it was. And he works out exactly the same hour that Jesus said the words. Look what happens in the man's heart and mind. Verse 53, the last phrase. And he himself believed. And his whole household. Now, my question is, what did he believe the second time? Did he believe his son was better? Well, he didn't need to believe. It was true. It was there. The boy was better. What does he believe? He believes in Jesus. That Jesus is God, I suggest to you. Why do I say that? Verse 54. This again is the second sign that Jesus did when he had come out of Galilee. Into Galilee. Jesus is showing to those who want to see. Jesus showing himself as God. And those who want to see, see. Those who are open that this man is God in human form, with flesh, will and do see. He sought Jesus out, he spoke to him, he submitted to him, and he went his way without seeing. But he believes. I just contrast for a moment the crowd and the man. The crowd receive without honour. Okay, they warm welcome, but actually they're not really interested in Jesus. Yet this man comes and takes Jesus at his word. He's not interested in big signs. He just comes empty-handed, desperate need. Now, we've seen people like that before in the Gospel of John. We'll see them again. What happens when people come empty to Jesus? They go away filled. They go away filled. In contrast, what happens to people when they come to Jesus full? They go away empty. Without Jesus. And that's, I suggest, what's happening. The crowd have come, and they've received him, they've not honoured him. They've come full. They don't need him. They've come full. But they go away not seen. One man has suggested three things might be going on in the crowd's minds. Firstly, is the pride of association. The pride of association. Well, Jesus is from Galilee. We're from Galilee. He's our local boy. Miracles in Jerusalem? Yep. But he's one of us. Two boys I grew up with. One played football for Manchester United. One played rugby for Ireland. And when they would come on the telly, I was pretty quick at telling people. He used to go to my primary school. I used to play football with him. He was my neighbour. I used to play with him in the garden. I don't know what happened to my sporting calibre. But there was a pride of association. I know him. He's from my hometown. He's from my school. I know him. He's from my neighborhood. Pride of association. Is it possible that people who were impressed at Jesus were filled with pride that he was one of them? Is it possible, secondly, not just filled with pride, but also they expected perhaps favoritism? Jesus would be different here, home, than he would be elsewhere. He'll do things there for other people, but here he'll do things for us differently. Special treatment. The expectancy of favoritism. Possibly that's going on. What about the other danger of coming to Jesus full, and that is of familiarity? We know him. We've seen him grow up. We know who his mum and dad are. We know who his brothers and sisters are. We know him. And there's this dullness of familiarity. Unimpressed by the fact that he's just proved that he's God in human form. I think those are three helpful suggestions that indicate what's going on in the hearts of the crowd. How is it that someone can see Jesus and not trust him? How is it someone can hear about Jesus and not want him? Pride of association. Let's try it on ourselves. I go to a church. I go to a good church. Maybe you belong somewhere else and you're here, but actually you belong somewhere else. I go to a good church. And my family have always belonged to that church for many generations. Pride of association. You're able to trace back contact with church or family. That has got nothing to do with knowing Jesus Christ. And whether it's this church you attend, this church you belong to, or another church, pride of association has got nothing to do with Jesus Christ. What about expecting favoritism? Because we belong here, because my parents were Christians, because I know lots about the Bible, God's on my side. That's not true. These people were from the same area Jesus was from. They saw him grow up. They knew him. They knew him probably inside out. And he knew them. Didn't make a blind bit of difference. They were blinded by their expectancy of favoritism. What about dullness of familiarity? Can I suggest to you this is a real challenge? Especially if you belong to a church where the Bible is sincerely taught. You may know lots of things. And it's possible over the last few years you've heard lots and lots and lots of things. And you've grown in your knowledge. And yet at the same time, the preciousness of Jesus Christ is going down. You care less today about Jesus Christ than you did. Despite this growing knowledge, there could be this familiarity. I know more, and I care less. We, like the crowd, can come to Jesus full. Full. Not hungry. Not desperate, but full. Let me ask you a question. As you've come here today, how have you come? I'm not talking about where you walked or whether you drove. What's going on in here, really? Now, you don't need to tell me, but you do need to tell yourself. Have you come hungry? Have you come needing Jesus? Or have you come comfortable, very relaxed, routine Sunday morning, just another one? Mind occupied with a million things. It is possible, is it not, even for the Christian to come to Jesus full. Or have you come, and if you could express it in words, there would be desperate words. Have you come starving, knowing that Jesus Christ is all you need? Have you come hungry to gain from Him, to gain of Him? Have you come wanting? Because that's how the man came. He came empty-handed, desperate need. And He sent away full. And those who come full, day finishes and they see nothing. Jesus in town, they're not impressed, they're not satisfied. They haven't met Him. Let me just put these in three boxes and then we'll finish. It is possible for our fullness to deceive us. You're in church on a Sunday morning. That means you're a minority of the British public. And you may think because you're in church on a Sunday morning, you're on safe ground. But if you come to church and if you come to God's word, if you come to be with God's people and there is that spirit of fullness, you don't need Jesus. Just like the crowd, you don't really honour Him as God. There is a deception going on in your heart that is preventing you from knowing Jesus Christ. Jesus has come as God to be known as God. He's not a miracle worker, not a good teacher, he's not a good man, not a prophet. He's all those things, but he's all those things because he's God. And unless you honour Him like that, like the man did in obedience and faith, you do what He says because you trust Him. Unless you honour Him like that, you are being deceived. You are under a deception that you are okay as you are, and you are not. That is not true. It is possible for us to be deceived, like the crowd, I suggest. They thought they gave Jesus a wonderful welcome party. But actually, there is no honouring of Jesus. So it can deceive us. And if that is you, and it's possible that that alone has struck your mind, think, actually, that's a good description of me. I'm here, but I'm not really interested in Jesus. Jesus teaches in Matthew 5, blessed are those who are poor in spirit. There is an emptiness, there is a nothingness that they bring to Jesus. But they go to Him for filling. They go to Him for satisfying. They go to Him for everything. Those are the ones that Jesus welcomes. Blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs the kingdom of heaven. How about that for a gift? Ask Jesus. Ask Jesus to change you. So that you won't come full again. But you'll always see yourself as needing Him, needing Him, needing Him. No matter how much you grow, needing Him. Ask Him to change you and to bring you to Himself. It's not just a deception, it's also a decline. Christian, this is more brief. These attributes of fullness can live in your heart, can creep in. The heart is deceitful and wicked above all things. And you can become sinfully self-satisfied with all sorts of things. If there's been any trace of these things, like weeds are popping up where they shouldn't be in your heart and mind, confess them to your God and ask him to get rid of those things that hit your affection, your love for Jesus Christ would be sincere. These things can keep us from God. They're a deception. There can be a decline in our heart towards these things. Confess those things. And lastly, there's a demonstration. A demonstration of how Jesus treats people who come to him empty-handed. My son is at the point of death. Please come. Desperate man. And he goes home with more than he expected. He expected a 15-mile journey, rushing back with Jesus, wondering if his son's going to make it or not just until Jesus gets there. Jesus heals him. He gets more than he expects. Demonstration that Jesus fills, satisfies, supplies all who come in desperation. You look like a lovely bunch of people. Very respectable. Very well turned out. It's great to see you. But Jesus is talking about what's in here. Not what's out here. He calls us to live by faith. Not by sight. Do you see? Do you see Jesus as God, ready to fill the empty? And happy to leave the full empty. Come to him. Be filled with Christ.